afraid. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are we on fire?
Ron is dead.
How you doing, Stanky Leg?
High five from everyone.
Took it to the limit.
I have a horrible foot fetish.
Do you? Let's go, Red Sox.
I'm Leo.
Let's go, Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
No Red Sox.
Hear me like a bow, bow, bow.
Well, Dick, well, yeah.
Stop the hammering.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
It's become clear that tensions between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are threatening to fracture the Patriots dynasty.
The TB12 method is more than a new way to think. It's better living.
For the organizations that's the smartest in football, they have some of the dumbest fans in sports. Like, dumb, dumb. Like, duh. Hear the tweet again. Belichick and Brady and Kraft all denied it. Therefore,
Sam,
why are you keeping it a story?
Our brains are our control centers.
Dealt with some non-Tennessee subjects here for the last few days. At this point, I'm all in on Tennessee.
Brady with a give to James White. Runs it left to the five. White dives toward the goal line. Is he in? Second touchdown of the night for James White. And the Patriots have taken the lead.
Start to flip the script.
Brady takes the snap. He looks left. He throws to the middle. Touchdown, New England. Finding Chris Hogan in the back of the end zone.
Welcome back, Chris Hogan.
Woo. A handoff to Bolden. Right up the middle. Untouched. Touchdown, Patriots.
You could drive a truck through this Dick LeBeau defense.
A seventh straight trip to the AFC Championship. And the Patriots will stage it right here at Gillette next week versus either Jacksonville or Pittsburgh.
They say they have the best draft in the entire NFL. Are you surprised to hear that?
Certainly not. The first year, we took it to the limit.
It's been 20 years since then. We haven't been too strong in the last few years.
Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show. Rules, 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 rules. Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules.
They have him in front of Fournette. Fournette goes airborne. He's in. Touchdown, Jaguars.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
Roethlisberger, ball, top three, rolling around, and it scooped up the speed of Telvin Smith. Goodbye. Touchdown, Jaguars.
Jacksonville, New England.
Woo. Oh, we've been strong.
Bought right up the middle, uncut.
You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning. We're the Toucher and Rich radio program. Mike Lockhart with the montage today. Town Fair Attire Studio, 617-779-0985. Burt Breer from MMQB and NBC Boston Sports. Or NBC Sports Boston, whatever the hell it is. We're on it, too. He is here in studio as we work the holiday. But a lot of strangeness going on yesterday in the NFL, and we will get to that. But just to get it out of the way, Bert, the chances you think that Jacksonville can come in here and make that game competitive?
I think they can make it competitive because on paper, this is the type of defense that you need to have to stop Tom Brady because they can get to the quarterback with four. They don't need to bring extra pressure. And so I think that they could keep the game competitive, and I think with Leonard Fournette, they can find a way to limit the amount of possessions that Brady gets, but in the end, I don't think they're going to be able to. I mean, I think it could be one of those games where it's like 17-14 going into the fourth quarter, and then it winds up being like 31-14.
Because, you know, Bortles is getting credit about the way he played yesterday. How much of that is warranted?
Well, we're also like grading on a curve here, aren't we?
Right, exactly.
I mean, he completes a couple balls on third and nine, and all of a sudden we're like, whoa, where'd that come from?
A deep ball. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, I mean,
everything that he had success was with just checking down to his backs.
They don't need him to be great, though. That's the thing. And, like, he put together, now, he collapsed at the end of the year, but if you look, there was a three-game stretch at the beginning of December where he was really good. And that's a product of the environment. You know, like, that's so much of what being a good young quarterback in the NFL is now is, do you have a running game so they can take pressure off of you? and you have a defense, so you're not playing from behind.
He's a role player. Well, he's a role player on that team.
Like, look at Dak Prescott in Dallas, right? How good he looked as a rookie when the offensive line was intact, when Ezekiel Elliott was rushing for 1,800 yards. Mm-hmm. They didn't need him to be great. And so look, he walked into an awful situation when he was drafted. And so they're playing from behind all the time. They're asking him to win games for them. Of course he looked awful. I'm not saying he's going to be good. I'm not saying he's going to wind up being a great quarterback. But it's part of it's the environment you're in. And when you have Leonard Fournette, you're probably in second and six a lot more. You're probably in third and two a lot more. You're probably in a better situation on a more consistent basis. And you got that defense. You're not playing from two touchdowns down. And so, what they asked him to do yesterday, if they can put him in that situation, he can be okay. It's when he's constantly in third and 10 and when he's behind by two touchdowns that the problem comes.
All right. 617-779-0985. A fact. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up?
So I was looking at the history between the Patriots and the Jaguars, and I saw that the Patriots were 10-1 in their history. The one loss that the Patriots have ever lost to Jacksonville was in the playoffs in 1999, and Mr. Scott Zolak was the quarterback.
Bledsoe broke his finger on Monday Night Football. He had a pin sticking out of his pinky on his throwing hand, and he tried one game, couldn't play. And Zolak, I think, Bert, check me on this, played the final two games of the regular season of the regular season.
Yeah,
and then they forced him to play
injury.
In the playoffs. That was a division. That was wild card round of the playoffs.
That was the run where they went to the
9 wild card game, I think.
Yeah, they lost in the first round.
Yeah,
in
but that was a good Jacksonville team too.
They went to the AFC Championship that
and
year,
probably
right?
Should have won.
No, that was a different year.
Okay,
that was a different year.
All right, so Scott Zolak responsible for the one blotch.
Yes.
On the record
correct.
Again.
Correct.
I wonder how many times he has
what
that
it,
title.
What does it take for Jacksonville to beat the Patriots?
Yeah.
I think Scott Zolak at quarterback. Well,
there you go.
You never know who can get in there. Yes. A very interesting slate of games yesterday, and of course, the Minnesota game. One of the more unlikely things that you'll ever see on a football field.
I mean, unbelievable.
That's the first time that's ever happened in a playoff game, a walk-off touchdown like that. That's never happened before.
Yeah, that is the... Who's the safety that came
Marcus
in?
Marcus Williams, who's been great for them all year. I mean, he's played, I believe, at the end of the year, he'd been on 99% of their snaps. He's playing every single snap for them as a rookie. And, God, part of it's the defensive call. Okay, why is there only one guy back? Right? Why is there only one guy back? But you got to make that play.
So there was talk about he didn't want to get a pass interference and you can't slow down at that point. Do you buy any of that?
No.
Or is his job just to kind of stay there and just make sure no one gets passed?
Part of that situational. What do I have to do to win the game now? All I have to do to win the game now is keep the guy in bounds and take him to the ground, right? And the game's over. That's all you have to do. And you can see the Saints sort of overcommitted to defending the sideline.
Right.
Because they didn't want the Vikings setting up a game-winning field goal.
Right.
And so they defend the sideline. They didn't have enough people back. And it just, you feel like in that situation, rush three, put at least two people back. So, this sort of thing doesn't happen. Once you saw him catch that ball, it's like, oh my God, no one's back there. You know, normally when a guy catches the ball in that situation, he's got to weave through three people to get to the end
zone.
Right,
exactly. Once he caught it, he cleared everyone and he didn't have to do anything.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, it's a lot to put on one player. But on that one player, your job is do not let him get past you.
Was part of it bad luck? There was another quarterback there.
That's why they call it position safety.
Right. Yes,
that's literally why they call it safety.
Yeah. And especially at that point, your one responsibility is not to let the guy get by you.
I'm trying to remember that cornerback, the teammate he took out, would he have had a play if he had kept his feet, if Williams hadn't taken out the other defensive back there?
Maybe Diggs.
I'm trying to remember.
Diggs is really
Diggs
fast.
Is quick. Oh, sure, yeah, Diggs is really fast. No, well, they should have had other people back, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm thinking, worst case scenario, Williams whiffs. But there was another guy there.
I mean, part of playing defense in that situation too is knowing where your help is.
Yeah,
and Williams had to know in that situation. I got people in front of me. I don't have people behind me. And so I make sure he does not get past me.
Yeah. So have you ever seen anything like that in a game before?
I'm trying to think.
Is that the craziest end of a game that you've seen in the playoffs?
Is there? I mean, I'm
non Super Bowl. Obviously,
it's 6 a.m.
people can point to the Patriots comeback and all that stuff.
Immaculate reception.
Immaculate reception. Was that the AFC Championship game?
No.
I wasn't alive for that.
I think it was. Well, I wasn't alive either. But I think that was a first round game.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
It was a divisional game, right?
Yeah, I think it was a divisional game. So there's the immaculate reception and what happened yesterday.
And the Music City Miracle.
The Music City Miracle, I was enjoying myself very much while that was going on. It was a New Year's Day, and the young lady had stayed at my house overnight.
Oh, nice.
And so as I watched that perform, I was being performed on.
Nice.
It was quite an exciting scene. I'll always remember that.
Isn't that interesting, Bert? Thank you for bringing that up. We kind of walked into a special story there.
Yeah, right? I woke up. We had slept on the couch.
Special moment for young Fred.
Bert, I didn't know this.
It was the millennium. It was New Year's Eve was the night before. And I had gone out with this girl, and then I realized that she had big breasts, and I realized that she had taped them up to, like, fit in the dress. And then I was like, holy moly. And I'm like, for the new year, can I please relax? And she said, I will help you with that. And I said, tip of the cap to you, my dear.
Yeah.
And then while that was all going on, I was watching one of the great plays in NFL history, which will always be embedded into my skull.
Chivalry in football.
That's right. Well, just a nice lady. Just a nice lady, you know. I made a small request, and she agreed to fulfill that request. And that's always how I look at it.
I have to tell you this, because Dan brings up an interesting point. Was it the buzzard or not? Were you out of school, but you were out of school by then? You were out of school by then.
No, this girl was all right. I had, like, an appearance on New Year's Eve.
Okay.
And so I took her. It was, like, a formal affair, but I was getting paid to be there.
Okay.
Toucher and Rich.
Wake up.
On 98.5. Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed. It's Toucher and Rich.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich by now. You know everything that happened last evening, but Tony Romo, who's really getting to me now. I usually don't notice these guys, but now he's really getting to me. The big problem with the NFL is, as you was evidenced on Saturday night, are these dumb replays. And then you saw Tony Romo. Just you go, yeah, I think that's a catch. And then you go, that's stupid, like, hey, just stop it. Stop it. Like, you've watched the replay 10 times, and now you're sitting around going, I don't know. It's like an annoying way of saying it, and it's just bothersome.
I think the end of the Pittsburgh-New England game probably spooked him a little bit, because you remember they were talking about it for about 60 to 75 seconds, like it was absolutely positively a catch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Romo, like, caught himself in the middle of that. He's like, wait a minute. And so now you wonder if maybe he's a little gun-shy to be definitive on anything.
And by the way, the idea that there is a officiating expert that's in the booth with them tells you all you need to know about what's wrong with the NFL. That, you know what? We're going to devote a nice half an hour of this to looking at replays. We might as well pop this guy in here so he can tell us what the rules are.
I never really thought of that, but that doesn't happen in any other sport.
No,
right?
No, it's completely unnecessary, because no other sport just stops for an hour and a half to look at any minutia that happened in the game.
So you don't have Kerry Frazier sitting up in the booth at an NHL game. It's awful.
I'll tell you what, and I was all for centralized replay. Like, I thought that was a good idea, going to New York, right? Because you could streamline things and you put another set of eyes on it. The one way they should be using it, the one way they should absolutely be taking advantage of it, they aren't. Which is when there's an obvious call, when there's something obvious, whether it's an overturn or you're upholding a call, when it's obvious, why can't Al Riveron or whoever's covering whatever game it is just buzz down to the officials and say, you know what, don't even go under the hood.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Just don't, like that should be the way they should be using it.
Sure. Just, yeah, avoid this. And I don't understand.
The obvious ones is like, they just knock out the obvious ones. Like, you don't need to take, like then he's got to walk all, he's got to take his, 55-year-old ass over there.
I wonder how much is because Microsoft is the sponsor of it. I wonder how many times they feel like they have to walk over there and stand in front of that dumb Microsoft
thing.
I didn't
think about that, but that's absolutely got to be a factor.
Of course it is. Yeah. I mean, there was a catch late in that when New Orleans just kept throwing challenge flags for no reason and screwing it all up.
Yeah, Sean Payton threw back-to-back challenge flags, one of which was obvious he shouldn't have challenged it.
Yeah.
And then he blew two of his timeouts.
Okay. The first one I was okay with because the first one would have put the Vikings in third and long.
Okay.
The second one wouldn't have made that. It would have been like a few yards in a field goal.
Exactly.
And it was obvious.
There's no reason for it.
And they just sat there looking at it and looking at it and looking at it.
Here's a question on the game-winning touchdown. It was a touchdown. Everyone had celebrated, yet Steratore still hadn't officially announced that the game was over yet. It took him, what, two and a half minutes
to
figure out? He disappeared.
Well,
and then all of a sudden
they
confirmed it and then ordered people back out onto the field to kick an extra point that wasn't necessary.
So we're using the technology so those guys in New York can interfere, right? Like with whatever call they feel like interfering with. But then they're not streamlining the obvious ones. Mm-hmm. They're not taking that situation there where there's chaos in the field and just buzzing down to the official in the field saying, hey, you know what? That's not even close.
Best ending to a football game all season, and they wrecked it.
Right.
Well, see,
then the Saints went in the locker room.
Yes, you got to call like 11 random guys back out on the field for an extra point that wasn't necessary.
See, there was so much excitement and the Vikings were down the tunnel. It didn't really seem like they were ever going to overturn that. So it was more just like a celebration. Whatever they were doing outside of it, that wasn't like I got to hold my breath to celebrate kind of thing. But bringing him back on the field.
But maybe if you're in the stadium, you would. Because it seemed like the same.
It seemed like the stadium was all right. In this particular instance, usually you're absolutely correct.
But it's just a bad look that the Steratore has to announce to the crowd that, yes, it's confirmed. It is a touchdown.
Right.
2.5 minutes after. I mean, Diggs has run up the tunnel. He's celebrating on the field. Keenum's running around with his helmet off. Crowd's going bananas. And then everything stops so Steratore can buzz in.
Can you imagine if they overturn that? Like, if they sat there for, like, 5 minutes looking at it and the whole crowd's going nuts, people are leaving, and then they're like, oh, it's overturned. Yeah, it was...
But this is the problem with everything with the NFL. They're reactionary about absolutely everything, right? Like, this is why they form committees when Richie Incognito makes Jonathan Martin feel like a nerd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they form a committee when that happens. They form a committee over domestic violence. They form a committee... Like, it's just... They're so reactionary to public, to what the public's saying on social media. It's like, oh, we got to do something about that.
Now, social media. Just ignore it. I mean, you have billions of dollars. I'm sure you've done unprecedented amounts of research. Stay off of social media.
They have rabbit ears like you wouldn't believe. Like, the way that they listen to what's going on social media. Like
Why are they not more savvy?
Because the place is run by PR guys and lawyers.
Yes, but
what are PR guys and lawyers? PR guys and lawyers don't get in front of things. PR guys and lawyers react to crisis.
I understand that, but how much focus groups and how much research in terms of minute-to-minute ratings and all these things that they do, and they're going to rely on jabronis on Twitter? Like the people that tweet on Twitter, that's, for the most part, just a small collection of... morons, slots full of garbage and hate that are just sitting there. You start running your billion-dollar business based on the attitude of a few lunatics?
You'd think that, like, Fred getting off of Twitter would make him, like, kind of level off a little bit with the hatred, but it's, like, getting worse and worse,
No,
Fred.
This is the first time he's had really a platform to do this. I got to give Fred a little credit. He hasn't gone off on Twitter in a while, but this subject, this topic is kind of folded
it
in.
Well, yeah, it is.
Because
now... Aggressively angry. Well,
you have 6 a.m. Fred here, too. That's the other part.
No, I'm all right. But now, by the way, because now every story breaks on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Someone passive aggressively accuses someone on Twitter instead of, you know.
Have you been following the coaching news? How people accuse other people of stealing news from them and everything?
Oh, sure.
Oh, no, I don't care about that. No, but it's if someone
that's
makes
a lot
it,
of fun, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah.
But
especially for a guy like you.
Just so you know,
I said this 2 weeks ago.
I know.
And I know. So technically, it's
baseball
my story.
Writers are the best, too. Same thing.
It's just like there would be these massive accusations. And I'm like, why are you making this on Twitter? Like, why are you limiting this out of what you can say? Why don't you release a statement? The press would pick it up. You know, where you can have a fully formed statement.
Much quicker this way, Fred. You release it on Twitter and boom,
everyone's
got it. If
something means something to you, why would you just go off on Twitter? I don't know. I mean, the president, we get our information from the president on Twitter. The whole thing is,
therefore, it must be important.
Did he ever have his awards on Twitter? Wasn't that coming?
Oh, like, the Sad Media Awards, yeah.
It was supposed to happen, but I don't think I ever saw it.
No,
it actually happened?
He delayed it because he wanted to add the buildup. He said, so many people, people have asked about it, exclamation point.
Well, he's got a few other things, a few irons in the fire right now that he's got to deal with. I don't think there's a lot of time to do those awards.
But the sad thing is Trump will make time for this. It's so important to him.
I don't know.
I think the fake news awards are pretty high on his priority list.
I do too. I honestly think that's the truth.
But like Le'Veon Bell is on Twitter. It doesn't do any good. Like these.
Oh, that was great. Like he was like tweeting at Patriots fans at like 12:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it's like you're Le'Veon Bell. Just stop. You know what are you doing to your like? No good's going to come of this. This is not something you need to be doing. You, by the way, and also, you have a microphone in front of your face every day of the week.
Yeah.
What are you doing on Twitter at 12:30 at night? Just stay off of it.
Well, the best thing is, like, they had sort of, like, he'd sort of avoided stepping into it all week, and they'd avoided looking ahead to the Patriots all week, and then literally midnight, 13 hours before kickoff, Le'Veon Bell's going on Twitter and talking about playing the Patriots.
Yes. Again, stay off of Twitter.
DeCastro went after him, too. You see that?
No.
Did not see that.
David DeCastro, the all-pro guard for the Steelers. Hang on one second. I'll find it. So here he said about... They were ready to go. They were mad. They were angry. They had something to prove. This is about the Jaguars. And they did it. Yeah, it's embarrassing. It really is, man. It blows my mind. They beat us 30-9. We played like crap, and we want to talk about New England? I don't know what to say about that. It's just stupid. It's just not what you do. You don't need to give a team like that more bulletin board material.
Well, good. They're going to have a tumultuous offseason where Le'Veon Bell says he's going to hold out. We'll get your opinions on that and exactly what's going to happen with all those things. We'll get your thoughts on assistants going to other places. We'll get your thoughts on a bunch of stuff, including we'll take some phone calls, 617-779-0985. Here are the headlines.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Again, unfortunately, if you're just a fan of the game, I guess if you're a huge Patriots fan, it's pretty good. But I don't know if this is the worst two teams that they've ever had to play going into a Super Bowl, but it's got to be close.
I think if you'd asked me on Labor Day if the Patriots were going to play Tennessee in Jacksonville to get to the Super Bowl, I would have told you you were crazy. Tennessee would have been more feasible at the time.
Yeah.
Because like, I think most, like a lot of people were on to Tennessee.
Yeah, they were a hot team.
And Tennessee was actually like on balance. Like, I think if you ask most people in Nashville, the season was disappointing.
Are they firing Mularkey?
No.
No,
they're giving him an extension.
Okay.
That win, if they lose that game, though, if they lose their first playoff game, he's out, right? It was that came down to that one game.
Which they lucked
into.
It's
interesting because I was told the couple days before that game that the relationship between him and the general manager, John Robinson, who was here for all those years, was actually going to save him. And the interesting thing about it was like all of the reporting that came out on Friday and Saturday and Sunday leading up to their first playoff game, from what I understand, Mularkey thought that was coming from the general manager. So they have to, there's some repair that needs to be done there. Now, I don't know whether it is or not, but I talked to a couple of people who know Mularkey who said like they felt like there was a breach of trust there. And so now that's going to have to be rebuilt to some degree. And certainly, look, here's the thing, like so much of like ownership in that city, it's like everything's about the quarterback, right? And that's why Mularkey got the job in the first place, because he did a better job protecting Mariota down the stretch of his rookie year. And if they were going to fire Mularkey, it was going to be about Mariota's development. So if Mariota doesn't look better, and he didn't look great this year, if he doesn't look better in 2018, then I think that there's a good chance there's going to be a change after next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's another someone with ties to this place, like a Mike Vrabel.
Now, Mariota, how much did that right leg injury hurt him throughout the course of the year?
Oh, I think it limits him, but I think, look, when you watch that offense, right, look at, how much did you guys watch Philly?
Enough.
So, you look at all the stuff that Philly put in to make Carson Wentz, and a lot of people have talked about how, like, the college offense is failing in the NFL. Philly, like, half their offense is a college offense. So they're running RPOs, they're running read option, they're doing all of that different stuff. L.A., the Rams are doing a lot of that stuff to make Goff comfortable. And so I think part of it is, like, okay, like, if you're Tennessee, you look at it and you say, well, Sean McVay did all this stuff to make Jared Goff comfortable and got a great year out of him. Doug Peterson and Frank Reich and John DeFilippo in Philly have done all this stuff to make Carson Wentz comfortable and get him playing fast, and it's worked. And then you look at Mariota, and it looks like he's regressed.
Right.
You know, and we've seen where you're not going to go and run like a full-blown college offense, but we're adding college elements and running college elements effectively can, like, kind of shorten the learning curve for these guys. And with Mariota, like, it's just they're doing some of that stuff, but it's not working. And then they're trying other things with him that are more traditional pro concepts, and those aren't working. And it's just, it feels like there's a lot of clutter in his head. And you can see the ability. Like, that's the thing, is like the end of that Kansas City game, like, once they got in more two-minute situations, they had to come from behind. You start to see the ability come out. We saw it on the 95-yard drive here, too.
Right.
Like, he can play. Like, and he's got a good head about him and all the rest of it. Like, it's just, I think so much of what happens in Tennessee and the decision that John Robinson is going to have to make after the 2018 season is going to be based on the development of the quarterback. Because that's what ownership want. Like, ownership has put their stock into Marcus Mariota, and if he doesn't develop and he doesn't take a step forward in 2018, then Malarkey's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I don't know why you just delay the inevitable with him. But
That's the thing. That's the thing that's crazy about it to me, right? Like, sometimes he, like, that's not like a small decision. Like, that's a decision that, like, you should be making with like 10 years in mind, right?
Right.
So does like that Kansas City game? Like, Travis Kelce gets hurt, and like the game turns. And that's what you're basing a 10-year decision on?
Right.
Like a monumental decision for where you are as a franchise, a monumental decision for the general manager. Like, it's going to cost, it could cost them Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and then you also have the touchdown pass that you deflected to yourself. I mean, there's a bunch of things in that game that nothing to do with Malarkey. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, fellas.
Hey.
I've been on hold a while, so you kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. First, let me preface my conversation by saying I am definitely not anti-TB. I'm anti-TB 12 right now, but I think the NFL is in for a nightmare scenario here, whereas the advertisers as well. A Jacksonville, Minnesota, so Bortles and Keenum Super Bowl. I know it's a big game, but don't you think that would hurt ratings and hurt advertisers and everyone that's paying for those spots? And of course, Fred's nightmare. All the penalties and the reviews this weekend, the Philadelphia game until the end was unwatchable. There were so many reviews in that game.
Yeah, they review things that are pedestrian catches that you would know in 2 minutes that it's fine. It's indisputable evidence. And for some reason, that still takes 5 minutes. It was happening last night. It happened last night in the Saints game. There was a catch that was really not a big deal. It was a catch.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and then it was reviewed, and it wasn't a touchdown. It was just something on the sidelines, and they reviewed it for 5 minutes. And there was never a debate that it was
I think
a
it was
catch.
The Mike Thomas catch, like, right?
Yes.
On the corner route?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a catch. And there was nothing crazy about it. When you saw it live, you saw it was a catch. I mean, this idea
it's just not that hard. Like, it's just not that hard. Like, all you got to do, look, Al Riveron's watching the same thing the rest of us are, only he has more monitors.
Right.
Right? And so he can see all of it at once. Like, if we can all sit on our couch and see it in 15 seconds, and they have a direct line onto the field, especially in the playoffs, when there's only one game going on at a time, right? Like, why can't you just buzz down and say to the official, don't waste your freaking time?
Because he's got to sit there and they got to look
underneath
at it.
Underneath the light blue Microsoft.
Well, first of all, they got to do it because it's Microsoft. And second of all, they got to do it because they have to see, you know, the camera that's on the pylon that, you know, can zoom in to almost a, like it's under a microscope, and they can slow the film down frame by frame as if that's necessary.
Every one of these is turning into a federal investigation.
Yes,
now.
And it ruins the flow of the game.
And here's the thing, like, that's not what replay was ever intended for.
No.
Replay was to, like, replay was to correct the blatant F-ups, right? Like, that's what is, that is, it is in place to, like, to correct that stuff. And so, if it's going to take you 2.5 minutes to figure out what happened, then, like, that's not what it's for. That was not what it was for in the first place.
Or how about Fournette scores? He just runs the ball into the end zone. And then they look at it, and then the announcers actually discuss if it's a touchdown. Like, Fournette runs into the end zone with the ball in his hands, crosses the plane to the goal. It's a touchdown. But then they have to see, was his knee maybe? No, his knee was not down. None of it was down. He scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
He scored a 2-yard touchdown. How about the one where he hit the pylon? And then they had to see.
Oh, yeah, when he got his foot inside the pylon.
Right,
yeah.
And they had to look at it 55 times, even though you
saw. That's what the pylon's there for.
Exactly.
That's why the pylon's there, is to create.
And then there's, where's the ball? Where's the ball? I don't know. His foot's in the end zone. He touched the pylon.
The pylon is literally there for that situation.
Yeah, so you hit the pylon
with the camera in the pylon.
Yeah, which they should get rid of right away. They just need to, that was a touchdown. And to look at it and to go to the camera in the pylon, it was ridiculous.
And I think part of it, too, and we talked about the league having rabbit ears, I think the refs do, too. Like, they know everybody's sitting at home with 10 different camera angles in high definition, and they know what's being beamed into everybody's living room. And I think probably for them, it's like, well, you know, this is going to look bad if we get this wrong. So, and that's how it goes from being like into, like, again, it's supposed to be like a criminal standard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, beyond a reasonable doubt is the only time you overturn it. And now in a lot of these cases, it turns into a civil standard where it's 51-49.
Right.
That's not what it's there for. No, It's not there so you can call a touchdown on the field and then go back and discuss it. That's not what it's there for.
No, it's not there. Yeah, it's not there to see, make sure that it's beyond a reasonable doubt. If the call, you go with the, it should be you go with the call on the field 95% of the time. And also, there should be a time limit for how long they can do it, which gets back
new
to
shot clock.
Yeah, which just goes back to, you know, if you have a guy in New York that's control of all these things, especially in a playoff game, yeah, you got 90 seconds. You got 90 seconds from the time that you announced that you're going to review it. And then that includes when you meander out and as slow as you can, and then, you know, like a sloth hit the button and then started announcing things.
Well, in college, and like I think at least the Big Ten and the SEC are like this, and I think most conferences are, they don't mess with somebody going under a hood. They've got somebody upstairs.
Yeah.
Well, which makes it much easier.
College has become a superior game. I mean, it just has.
It's a better product.
Absolutely, it is. There's really no arguing it. I mean, you might not be a fan of it, but if I was to have you sit down and watch a random football NFL game and a random college game between two good teams, I mean,
you get, like, there are games between bad teams. Like, Tennessee-Florida was incredibly entertaining, and they're two bad teams.
Exactly.
You know?
All right, we will return 617-779-0985, including at 7 o'clock. It's a very scary situation for Beadle, but he miraculously gets out of it. We'll talk about that.
Toucher and Rich.
Is Tony Romo bothering anyone else?
Not to the extent that he bothers you.
His whole thing going, doesn't bother anyone else.
I like Tony. I think he's under higher level of scrutiny because very few guys have come right off the field and been part of a number one team.
He
like
didn't
that.
Bother me until everything had to be, he had to scrutinize everything and change his mind 55 times during replays. That is my big problem with him. All right, Mike, do we have the clip of Tony Romo talking about how Belichick got his, where he learned the game? He was trying to all tie it up into a nice bow for the people. Now, this is, of course, during some kind of gap in play that was going on. So one of the 400 gaps in play.
Yeah, Belichick was kind enough to throw a challenge flag with 4 minutes left.
Yeah,
that's
four
right.
Minutes
left. Remember that. Was that before or after they went deep up 35-7?
It was after, I believe.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Belichick is saying, like, let's keep this thing going for a while. And here is his insight into what was going on with Bill Belichick as a child.
He's coaching all the way to the very end against his hometown team, by the way. He was born in Nashville.
Yeah.
His father was an assistant coach at Vanderbilt when Bill was born.
I tell you what, it's where he really learned a lot about football, because, I mean, that's where he, all those years, and by the when he left.
The ruling on the field stands as called. It's a first down for Tennessee. New England is charged with its second timeout in the half.
So he learned a lot about football. He was really smart by the time he left. And how long did he live there for?
Yeah, 1 year.
That's right. Super well-versed in the game.
I will say this.
So yeah. 1 year.
So, and he was born there. So
see, Bill,
he's
see,
one. Until he was one, he really got it.
Bill, that's what happens when you're challenging plays in the fourth quarter of a blowout. That's what happens.
Yeah. But I just start lying.
No, like they've run out of notes. Like like they've used everything that's on their sheets of paper in front of them, and now they're just making stuff up.
Yeah, but if he said he was born in Tennessee,
yeah.
Why do you have to pile on and say he's learned so much here?
Like, do you think Tony might have been kidding? I don't know. Like,
No.
I listened to that again, and I used to cover Tony. Like, so, like, he has a, like, I don't know. There's a little sarcasm there where, clearly at the end he was trying to play it off that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's being sarcastic or not.
Well, then that's over everyone's head. I mean, who knows the story of Bill Belichick? I mean, if you're just randomly watching the game on a Saturday night, you're not...
I think it's pretty well established that he grew up in Annapolis, right?
Navy is where he learned everything.
Of course, for us, but in Bert, you've covered the game for a living, but if you're just happening upon the game, I don't know where Bill Belichick grew up. Who the hell cares? Strider, go ahead.
Yeah, he sounds like my grandmother watching the game, changing his opinion every 2 seconds.
Yeah, I mean,
my ex-girlfriend who doesn't know football but wants to be one of the guys.
Yeah, he feels the need during replays to have a very strong sentiment about what happened, and then they'll show an angle where they pause it, and then he'll go, and then he makes that noise. And by the way, the crickets came out to play yesterday. By the way, we talked to Boomer Esiason, and I talked to him. It airs at 8:00. I talked to him this morning at 5:30. Boomer completely unaware of the crickets.
Yeah,
I don't know how people watch. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, wow. Have fun for the rest of the season.
This is going to crawl right inside your head and stay there for a while.
When CBS has a game, anytime they go to live action, they play a cricket noise.
It's when they wipe it back to
It's a cricket noise that they play going. And I can't believe that John and Rich had never heard it. I can't believe people watch games on that network.
Blissfully unaware, you know.
And it doesn't get into your head.
What's the functional reason for that?
It's to tell you that they're getting back to live action, which tells you all you need to know about the game is that they need to inform you that actually something happening in real time.
Live action is coming. Here's the chirp to prove it.
Yeah, there's a chirp, and then oftentimes it won't be live play anymore, so they have to go... Or someone be injured, so they'll go replay, and they'll go chirp, and then someone else, chirp, chirp, and just over and over again. Do you have those, Mike?
I die. I'll have to find one, though.
Yeah. And then once you hear it, Bert, oh, my goodness.
You are never the same.
I can't believe that.
It's true.
That
when did this come to your attention?
When he brought it up, he just said, Rich and I had no idea it existed, and then maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, is that about right, Fred? Maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, you brought this up, and now I hear it every single time.
Yeah, every time it's watch a game, there's a chirp.
Fred Tutcher, you bastard. Ruin the experience.
And it's got to be, and so since no one knows what's going on, it's got to be something that's despicably done for the wrong reasons, like backward masking on an album. Lord knows what kind of satanic
there
kind of stuff they want you to do.
There has to be a way. And that's the other thing. Now when I hear that chirp, I get annoyed because you would think that the power... CBS, you know, has a sizable budget. You would think there would be a way to get rid of that.
No, they put it in there.
No, I understand that. But surely we are not the only people that hear this. I'm sure they've gotten dozens of complaints.
No, apparently I'm the only person that has heard this
in
the entire world.
Interesting.
What you should do is focus on the games like I am.
Ah.
I'm breaking them down. You're probably over there having potluck dinners, talking about Father Flanagan. Talking to Father Flanagan over there.
Who am I talking to?
Father Flanagan, a rabbi.
Rabinowitz.
Rabinowitz.
Right.
Whatever you decide to do that day, whatever the wind blows, you decide to be whatever religion. And I'm sitting there, you know, concentrating.
You got the notes out. I know you bring a lot of notes in every time as a Patriots game.
I did for the first 2 years we were here. And then I said.
And then you junked it.
I said, who the hell's watching this Tennessee game with any kind of real interest? All right. We will have no commercials here, just the headlines. And we'll talk a little bit about what happened to Beatle. It's miraculous how he's doing. There will be no commercials here, just the headlines.